This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
A tidy nest egg of $3 trillion is now on the loose. I'm David Brancaccio. Good morning to you. Aerial shots of cargo ships waiting for spots at California ports, with ships waiting 13 days on average to offload supplies of stuff that businesses and consumers are waiting for, can explain some of the inflation in the U.S. economy now. But on the other side of the equation, let's take a moment to look at the demand side. People are in the mood to buy things, and that, too, is pushing up prices. On Fridays, we get an economic briefing from Christopher Lowe, the chief economist at FHN Financial in New York.
We had so much stimulus in the last couple of years that for the first time ever, we had a recession without a single month of declining income. And on top of that, households are sitting on a cushion right now of about $3 trillion in excess saving, that is, saving over and above what would have been saved at the pre-recessionary saving rate. So there is a huge amount of spending power in the U.S. economy that has been unleashed, remains to be unleashed. And on top of that, because of COVID, a shift in spending away from services toward goods. And what that means is that for the first time really in 30 or 40 years, goods producers in every industry are starting to panic about getting enough stuff to market to meet demand in the next year.
Hey, Chris, you know, this huge cushion of savings also helps explain how people are being so wonderfully picky about where they work and if they're switching jobs, because they have a little bit of cash on hand to help ease the transition.
That's definitely true. And, you know, one Fed paper, in fact, suggests they may not spend that money right away, which at the moment, given the inflation situation, is a good thing, because they need that cushion. I would also point out, David, that some of these people are being picky for a reason. The biggest increase in unemployment is among 30 to 35-year-olds, and in fact, in that group, mostly women. And it's very likely they're being picky because there's a shortage of childcare workers. And because there's a daycare shortage, they've got to find jobs where they can look after their kids and work too. It's not easy.
It's extremely difficult. Christopher Lowe, chief economist, FHN Financial, thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
While U.S. authorities are not expected to raise interest rates here until next year, central banks in, for instance, South Korea, Norway, and New Zealand are among those who've done this already. And now the U.K. central bank, the Bank of England, told the Financial Times that inflation there could hit 5% in the coming months, compared to prices that rose just 1.8% in the last year before pandemic. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig, has more on that from London.
The central bank's next policy meeting on November 4th will be a pivotal one, according to Hugh Pill. In previous forecasts, the bank itself said it expects inflation to rise to more than 4% by the end of this year. That's well above its 2% target. That, Pill said, is a, quote, very uncomfortable place for the central bank to be. So he believes the option to raise interest rates to tackle rising prices is one still very much in play next month. Economic recovery from the coronavirus pandemic this summer, coupled with staffing issues and ongoing supply chain problems, have helped push consumer prices up 3.1%, according to figures released this week. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
Let's follow that with a look at philanthropies that are becoming more climate aware and how they deploy their big money. This week, the Ford Foundation said it would divest from fossil fuels, and the McKnight Foundation announced it plans to get its entire $3 billion endowment to net zero carbon by the year 2050. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that.
It's one thing for a foundation to stop investing directly in fossil fuel companies.
That's the easy part.
Patrick Parento at Vermont Law School says getting an entire multi-billion dollar investment portfolio to net zero, that is a lot more complicated.
You have to define it to start with. What does net zero mean? Does it mean that you are investing in companies whose entire supply chain is free of carbon? Or are you talking about trying to offset emissions through, you know, planting trees or saving wetlands?
And either way, once a foundation has defined what net zero means, it then has to figure out how to evaluate how much every single company it's investing in is emitting.
What are the metrics they're going to use to measure that? What kind of reporting and transparency are they going to use to communicate that?
Those are questions the McKnight Foundation is just starting to figure out how to answer.
The first thing we need to do is we need to dig deeper into our endowment and understand its emissions profile.
Elizabeth McEverin is Director of Investments at McKnight.
Today, we have a fairly good understanding of the emissions that are created by our public market investments, but our private investments, we need to understand what kind of emissions they are creating.
That is hard to do right now, she says, because companies aren't required to share that kind of data.
So part of this commitment is we're actually trying to signal our fund managers, signal companies that we invest in, that we need to know more about both their greenhouse gas emissions today and their strategy to reduce emissions over time.
But until federal regulators like the Environmental Protection Agency and the Securities and Exchange Commission start requiring companies to publicly share that information, a lot of them likely won't, says Todd Court at the Yale School of Management.
We have voluntary standards already in place for capturing greenhouse gas emissions, and the ball is moving slowly down the court, but it's a slow progression.
If more and more institutional investors start saying we'll only invest in companies that are net zero or working toward net zero, that will also put more pressure on them, Court says, eventually.
That's a slow and tedious process.
But he says it is also the long-term solution.
If we want to solve climate change, we need huge chunks of the economy to start decarbonizing.
And he says that will require companies to change. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
With the big UN climate change conference beginning in Scotland in just over a week, U.S. regulators are drawing a line from climate to U.S. financial stability. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is here with details.
The report was issued by the Financial Stability Oversight Council, and that's an umbrella group of top financial regulators, including the Treasury Department and the Fed. And for the first time in this report, the group says climate change is an emerging threat to financial stability, and it says existing regulations should be reviewed, possibly updated, but it doesn't call for things like new testing of how well banks would weather climate-related losses or requirements that banks hold more of a financial cushion against those kinds of losses.
And how are environmental groups greeting this report?
Some are disappointed that there weren't more specifics, but Stephen Rothstein, head of the Ceres Accelerator for Sustainable Capital Markets, a group that works with investors on climate risk, he says the report is a good first step.
This is a process. It's not going to all happen by next week. So the basic idea is if there's more transparent information, then that will allow, again, investors, consumers, to make better decisions.
Eventually, Rothstein says there will be new regulations that maybe would set standards for how companies report things like climate emissions and would be easy for investors to understand.
All right, Nancy, thank you. We're also covering a move by a charitable foundation to try to ensure that its network of grantees and its own operations produce no more carbon than they use. The target for this goal is mid-century. Our coverage is streamable from our homepage if you miss it on the air. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report. We're from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.